for harm reduction, mental health services that affect a broad range of people.
Now, some of that sounds like, I mean, the community access or the community advocating sounds a little like that's political advocation.
It can be mixed because political advocacy does affect the whole entire community. It just depends on what type of level you really want to get involved in. Some people find the political process a little bit difficult to navigate. So I think community advocacy, you're still helping out other people that are in your community, and you're still able to affect people on a larger level if that's something you're interested in. And I think sometimes people forget that. Like, they are intertwined in a way and they are intersectional. But if you don't feel comfortable being a part of the political side of things, you can still support your community in so many different ways. You can even go to like the Parks and Rec budget meetings and just voice your concerns and see what's happening and seeing where you can fill in gaps. I know that one organization here, Free Hot Soup and Food Not Bombs, they're just people in the community who get together and cook food and offer food throughout the city at least 3 to 5 days a week. So if you are struggling to get food or access to hot meals, they're healthy. There's vegan options. There's gluten-free options. And that's a way to help out the whole entire community in a smaller scale. And then there's the personal side of advocacy, where you're advocating for your needs, you're advocating for safety in your environment, safety in your home, or if you are going to the doctor and you're just making sure that you're receiving the quality care that you deserve. There's so many ways to be a self-advocate for yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I know you have a lot of experience in political advocacy, and we did just go through a pretty broad legislative session with the GO Project. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you were working on during that time?
At that time, our basic focus has been increasing the wage for direct support professionals. We got some pretty spectacular people doing a very stressful job with a huge demand on them, and they're not giving a living wage in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. They're not given health care to make them healthy in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, hope they don't get sick. Mm-hmm. There's no proper compensation. You know, I mean, they're driving people all over the place, and yet they're just not getting enough compensation in like parking or like other business expenditures, like if they have to go and pay for a ticket to get into a place or to pay to go kayaking with somebody, mm-hmm. or things like that. I mean, there's just no proper business expenditures. On top of that, there's really no paid vacation. Mm-hmm. And these are the areas they keep on telling them you need to put these all in so that we don't wind up burning out our people. We got some really great people. Mm-hmm. We want to keep them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to give them these benefits. Otherwise, they're just going to keep on marching off the job when they can make more money at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And then I'd also like to see some kind of retirement so we can draw new people in.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the biggest struggles is finding good caregivers who want to stick around for the type of pay that they're receiving. And then you have the other side, the case management side and upper level entities telling people who are receiving services they just need to deal with the turnover because that's part of the job. But the reality is if there was more foundation and more support and more funding for these people providing these services, I think that longevity would be their goal, to stay in a job that provides their needs.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I'm pretty certain this is a topic that's just going to keep on coming up and coming up until legislators and the government finally start dealing with the issue, mm-hmm. and finally start treating these people like people instead of just, I'm sorry, we're going to say you got to do this job for free. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to fly with anybody who's got to bring home the bacon or take care of kids or anything else like that. Even people who are going to school still need some kind of money to pay for the rent, mm-hmm. and put food on the table.
And it's also, I think, really it kind of exposes how systems view people with disabilities. I think it's kind of like, well, we're not really prioritizing your needs. We're not thinking about the quality of care that you're going to need as you get older. We're just going to try and give you the bare minimum because we don't deem you as part of our society. We're not welcoming you guys into society. They're creating further and further barriers to isolate people and make them feel disconnected. And I think caregivers and direct support providers are tied into that stigma and that ableism as well.
Well, that's just it. When I've been doing my advocacy, I've been going down to the legislators. I've been going down to Salem and talking to the legislators, both in the House and in the Senate. And oftentimes I have to do an educational program. What's a DSP? What's mm-hmm. a PSW? What's a brokerage?
Mm-hmm.
What's a PA? And PA stands for personal agent. And anyways, you know, trying to educate them and then trying to get them to also remember because they want to know the numbers. Like, you know, give me the numbers of how many people or how many DSPs are not receiving, you know, mm-hmm. a living wage or what their overall expenditures are or anything mm-hmm. else like that. And unfortunately in the system, we don't have anything set up to track that information.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they're like, okay, so what measure is being presented forward to increase that? And once again, we do not have a measure presented, you know, a bill that would turn into a law.
Yeah.
And basically somebody wrote up something like HB 5026, which would just keep up with minimum wage. It wouldn't actually do anything to improve the situation. Mm-hmm. It just keep up with minimum wage. And we don't need to just keep up with minimum wage. We need to do better than minimum wage mm-hmm. and start giving people the benefits that make this a career and not just a stopgap measure.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I think, underestimate what direct support professionals do. A lot of the time, I feel like they think it's like you're going into someone's home, you're helping them do their laundry, you're helping them clean up their environment, maybe taking them to an appointment or two. And the reality of it is the type of care people receive fluctuates from person to person so much that
and from day to day.
And from day to day, like is your baseline is never the same day to day. And for anybody to think that and think that that's the type of care that you go in and provide on your shift, it's the same thing every day. They don't really understand what it's like to need somebody and need support in your life. And I think that people a lot of the time also forget everyone's disability, everyone's needs constantly are going to change. And if we're going to be supporting these people and breaking down barriers, we need to recognize that these people deserve quality care and they deserve providers who are getting the proper wages, but also the proper education. And with trainings, making sure that they're getting the education to continue providing supports and learning about the people that they're supporting and learning about what it's like to actually live in that person's life and recognizing all the different ways that people need support. It's not just going into somebody's home and doing a little bit of cleaning up. It could be that they're really not feeling well that day and you need to help them get to the doctor, but then you also have to make sure that their work's being notified. You have to make sure that they have transportation. There's so many moving pieces. It's not just going in and doing the work and fixing someone's life for them. You're working with them on different things happening every single day in their life.
I'm curious, this is Dina on the soundboard, what advice you would give with your legislative experience to someone to do advocacy that way in legislation?
So honestly, you've got to go talk to the legislators and you've got to ask them if they'd be willing to sponsor a bill. And you really got to kind of push it home because lots of times they'll say, well, we're already covering that in this bill. So if you really want to push it forward in your own perspective, you got to know how to schmooze them. Unfortunately, I'm not very good at schmoozing a legislator in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, I would have passed my own law by now. But first, you know, you got to go talk to them, have them sponsor a bill. The bill gets presented before either the president of the Senate or the chair of the House. And then they say, yeah, we'll send this bill out for committee and vote and stuff like that. Or no, we won't send this bill anywhere. And then from there on out, they've got to go through and they've got to put it through committee. Then they've got to vote on it. And once they vote on it in one portion of the Senate or in one portion of the legislature, then they got to send it over to the other portion. And then they've got to vote on it. And then it's got to go to the governor and get signed before you get it into law. It's a really long and complicated process. And trust me, politicians always play politics. They will give you an answer that sounds like an absolute positive, yes, we're doing it, when in fact they're just kind of sweeping you underneath the rug and moving you along and dealing with their own agenda. So the honest truth is, if you really want something passed, you got to run for a legislative yourself.
Mm-hmm. Glenna, you had something to say?
Oh, I think that they intentionally make it difficult to navigate. They intentionally put up barriers so that people can't access ways to change legislation and pass bills, because that's when communities and societies start to gain more control. When we were trying to pass rent control here in Portland, we were going down in meetings after meetings with the city, just trying to get them to listen. And it took, like, I think a year and a half of just going down there every time there was a city hall meeting. And we would disrupt if they wanted to say, well, this is not the topic for today, be like, this is the topic for today because this is affecting our community and you don't get the right to not listen to us. So there's the legislative part of going down and meeting with them. And I think that is truly so valuable when you are able to go down there to Salem, meet with these people in a number, and you guys are advocating for a thing in numbers, because it's really hard to do it on your own. Then there's also the political side of it within your own city and your own town, where you can be going to these meetings and you can be talking about different things that are going to affect the community, like rent control. And then you have neighborhood associations. I don't think people utilize that tool a lot. Your neighborhood association is a great way to get in there and make sure that your voice is being heard and you're advocating politically and for the community. I know in one community, my friends started to join the neighborhood association because they were really starting to sweep houseless camps, and they were really against that because that's in their view, they wanted to help people and they thought the sweeps are just causing more harm and more displacement. And it took a lot of time and effort for them, but they were very political about it. They learned how to, as you say, smooge, learning the right language to use so that people don't instantly get defensive and shut down, I think is really important when you're doing political advocacy. And it's just daunting sometimes to do it by yourself because they make it so hard to navigate the system.
Well, that, it's just, I mean, it's incredible how much language isn't like really black and white. It's mm-hmm. really gray. And they'll speak the language that makes it sound like you're getting what you want when, in fact, they don't have a clue as to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They don't spend any time in your shoes. It's sort of like caregiving, which is something we keep on talking about. They're not going to do anything about the difficulties of caregivers mm-hmm. until they absolutely need them themselves. Yep. And then, of course, by then, it's too late. They're out of the legislative to have done anything about it. And it's, you know, we live in a state that's temporary always. You're not always going to be 100% healthy, mm-hmm. able-bodied, and, mm-hmm. You know, that's just a temporary state. And it's just like, sooner or later, you're going to need a caregiver.
Sooner or later, you're going to need support.
Yeah, so it's just like, pay the support so it's mm-hmm. there when you need
mm-hmm.
it.
Well, oh, sorry, go ahead.
You talked about needing support, advocating, and you had mentioned to John when we first started talking about legislative advocacy, the GO Project. Is mm-hmm. that a place where people can connect to others to do legislative advocacy?
The GO Project is a great way to get involved with advocacy on a political level. They break it down so easily to understand. They kind of flag the Senate and House bills that affect people with disabilities and case management services and direct support provider wages. And they have a great website. They have a great newsletter that they send out. I believe it's biweekly, where they're keeping me updated on the Senate and House bills that we're monitoring, where they are in the system, where they are in the process. And their email newsletter includes hyperlinks, so you can actually go and read the Senate and House bills yourself, and it'll redirect you to the state page. They also have another hyperlink that you can click on in the email where you can actually type in your address and find your own senator and representative. So they make it really easy to navigate, really easily to get connected. They organize political days down at the state capitol. I believe they had 6 advocacy days this legislative session during the summer. But I think another thing to remember is political advocacy happens year-round, and they're a great place to start off with and maybe get your own group involved so you can continue doing it throughout the year.
I would also add that the GO Project will train you to kind of like talk to your legislators, and they'll tell you about how, I mean, once you go down to one, they set up in a room, you go into the room, and they'll sit there and they'll have like a couple of hours of seminar telling you, here's how you talk to your legislator, here's the thing we're wanting to get passed, and they'll even show you about how things work. Like, you know, they go in and they talk about budget and services and how they interact with each other. So they'll give you good solid education and training before you step in and just take on a legislator. They'll also send somebody with you and support you and back you up. So you're not just doing this alone. The GO Project will be there for you when you need them. That's one of the biggest things I can plug. So whereas I have a lot of experience with the legislators, Glenna, you have more experience with the community. Do you mind expanding on that?
Well, I started getting pretty community orientated when I was 15. I was working at the community center as a volunteer and just kind of keeping people who were houseless waiting for services. I would just kind of hang out with them and talk with them and give them an ear to listen to. And eventually that kind of grew and expanded a lot when President Trump became our president. There was a lot of community uproar and a lot of community fear, especially in the LGBTQ community, just due to a lot of the political views at the time and how it got pretty heated. A couple ways that I think people get a little bit overwhelmed because there's so many gaps within our society where people are falling through that it can be a little bit overwhelming when you're trying to plug in and actually help people. But, I mean, you don't have to be a part of an organization. You don't have to join any group or club. You can just carry snacks in your purse or in your backpack. And then when you see someone on the street, just ask if they're hungry. Carry a bag of water with you so that you have a couple water bottles in your bag when it's summertime and it's hot. Mm-hmm. Check in on your neighbor, you know, like just ways that you can literally check on somebody else and just say like, hey, are you okay? Do you need anything? And that's a way to just get connected, help the community, and you don't have to be a part of a group or organization. But if you do, you can go do volunteer work days at CSAs. I'm not sure what the acronym spells out to be, but it's the community farms that help out the food banks. They have work days where you can go and learn how to farm, and you can be helping people who receive food bank services and boxes. You can go down to an animal shelter and volunteer. There's a lot of animal shelters and a lot of animal sanctuaries in Portland and surrounding areas.
What about some of the housing service, like Real Choice Initiative? Mm-hmm. I know they're working on affordable, accessible housing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not the only thing they're working on, but I understand that's their primary focus. You have much interaction with their community members or with their...
I'm not sure exactly where they are right now since the first part of rent control was passed. The second part that they're trying to pass is if your building has a certain percent of vacancies, you have to lower the costs of rent.
Okay.
So if you want to plug in about housing and accessible housing, that is a great opportunity to go to city council meetings, wait for that topic to come up, or look on Facebook. Facebook is a great way to find community services, community meetings, literally just browsing through Facebook events that are happening that day and that week. You can find so many ways to plug in with your political side and your community side. You can find workshops, you can find trainings, you can find neighborhood association meetings, you can find parks and rec meetings, and that's how you can also plug in to fighting for accessible and affordable housing, is going to those city hall meetings. I know that the Black Lives Matter movement here does a lot of work with the city council, and they go down there pretty regularly to advocate for needs of the community. And again, I would just take the time to really browse Facebook events, because Portland has really stepped up its game on making it accessible and doing a lot of outreach. So social media is the best way to get connected that way.
All right.
How about self-advocacy? Where would we go for helping learn how to do that?
For that one, I would suggest self-advocates taking action. The Oregon Self-Advocate Coalition, build a movement, and...
Well, there's also training through DHS if you receive services. I also know another way to get plugged into self-advocacy besides the two groups that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of, again, if you can't attend in person, there's Facebook groups that are pretty heavily orientated on self-advocacy. And there's workshops and trainings for free all over the city all the time on self-advocacy skills.
Okay.
So, again, just taking that time to browse online through social media, finding those groups.
All right. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. We hope to have you sometime in the future, too.
It'll definitely come up with some of the projects, I think, that are happening.
Well, good. And, yeah, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Well, John, what do we have in the disability community we need to know about?
Thanks for reminding me, Dina. Real Choice Initiative will be having a living, independent living coffee hour on July 27th from 2 to 4 at 2475 Southeast Ladd Avenue, right across from the New Seasons on Division.
It's on the fourth floor?
Yes, it is.
And tell us a little bit about what happens at these coffee hours.
Basically, we all come together with our resources and attempt to solve each other's problems. We also express our problems and see if we can't solve them.
If you want more information about Real Choice Initiative, they do have a Facebook page with their name, or you can contact them through their website, which is realchoiceoregon.com. What else you got, John?
We will also be having a self-advocates taking action meeting. It is open to anybody with a disability, and it is in the same building as Real Choice Initiative. On the second Friday of every month from 11 to 1 in room 324, we hope to see you there.
Cool. And that's again at the Seven Corners building.
Yes, it is. Now, Dina, what's going on that's fun?
Well, I happen to have myself, I am leading an art group at Public Annex, which meets at Tabor Space every Wednesday from 10:30 to 1. I happen to be leading it with Michael Sherman on the 31st. The theme for the art we will be doing is called Being Held, and it is to help us express that feeling of being taken care of and being held in comfort. And during the experience of doing art, we also will have some experiential things in different corners. I'm bringing my kayak. People can sit in my kayak, and other people are going to kind of move and wiggle it a little bit so you can get that feeling of being held. we'll have a corner where people can get their bodies formed in different ways that looks like being held so that artists can draw those figures. In addition to drawing, people can also do some collaging or painting on some small bowls I've created out of paper bags. And then we also will have some clay for people to work with to express what it is like to be held.
Is there a cost?
Yes, it's $5.
I love public annex, by the way.
I know, they are the best. The people who are involved in it, the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the experience. It's such a feeling of community there.
Yes, Madeline does her best to make it inclusive. That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.
All right, that was Disability Justice. Next up, we'll have Film at 11 with Doug McVeigh. But first, we'll have a musical selection from Miles Davis. Thank you. at 11.
Than I started out with this morning, but otherwise everything is as chaotic as usual. There's a very special show today, and we're going to be